and welcome to This Is Why Golf. Opinion matters. This is the podcast where we celebrate one of the greatest sports on the planet with the great and the good of the golfing world. From the seasoned pros to those who have only just discovered their passion for the sport. For those of you who haven't heard about This Is Why Golf before, it's the place to go for all the data and information on why golf has such wide-ranging benefits for all of us. Whether you're an individual, a company, or federation, this platform is for everyone. If you want to check out everything we have on offer, just head to our thisiswhygolf.com website, which has been created to explain and explore why golf is so beneficial and quite simply one of the greatest sports on the planet. This episode, we are chatting to someone who is one of the most recognisable faces on television and was part of the Slingsby Golf Academy in 2021. Helen Skelton then went on to play in the Celebrity Pro-Am at the BMW PGA Championship in the same group as Andy Sullivan and Dan Walker, just a few months after picking up the sport for the first time. Away from the golf course, she juggles a very busy life, presenting on BBC Radio 5 Live, Country File, and managing to fit in an appearance on the latest series of Strictly Come Dancing, where she only went on and reached the final. Oh, and also, she is super mum to three children. She's found time to come and samba onto our podcast. Helen, great to see you. You really are juggling life at the moment. And I saw on your Instagram page, I think it was a couple of days ago, you said your son had had a total meltdown because you tied his shoelace incorrectly. What did he exactly say to you?
You're ruining my life because you can't tie the same way. I don't know, anybody who has boys might relate, but I feel like with my boys, you're the most, they worship you. Like you're their queen one minute. And then the next minute you make them the wrong sandwich. And oh my word, the world has ended. Like all my friends with little boys go, what is their ability to fly off the handle is sensational. And I think, I'm almost 8 years into being a mum, I think you just sort of look at it and it's like water off a duck's back. I'm like, okay, fine. Yeah, you'll be fine in a minute.
Totally can relate to that. I've got a couple of children and the mood swings are quite remarkable. And mine too as well. Yeah, we're just going with the flow. You really are juggling life. And I loved your support for Gethin Jones when he was doing his 24 hours of dancing for comic relief. My goodness, I texted Geth, he sends his love, and he's a golfer as well. But he was just exhausted, but elated at the same time. What was it like as a colleague to watch him go through that?
I feel very, very lucky to get to be a tiny part of that because I've done bits and bats for sport relief and comic relief over the years. So, and this is the kind of gushy but genuine bit. In my job, I've been to lots of the projects that are funded by comic relief and you genuinely see it. And I don't know whether it's age or it's being a mum, but I feel so much love and affection for that charity because so many of us, loads of people we all know will have been supported by comic relief funded projects, but we might not know it because a lot of those charities fly under the radar. You know, they help people with mental health, they help people with caring, they help people in situations that maybe don't shout about it. So to see him raise that much money, I mean, oh my days, every time the bottle came in, because he started the morning, he danced for 24 hours, but I think at hour like 22, he was at 300,000. And by hour 24, he was over £1 million.
Oh, it's incredible.
And it's testament to people watching because times are tough, but people are, you know, digging deep and giving to those less fortunate. And that sounds like one of those gushy charity telly statements. But when you've seen it firsthand, it's real. And I was genuinely, even this many years into telly, very humbled and very emotional and just very proud of him. I think he really did something epic that will go a long, long way.
Totally. Oh, wonderful. And he's still recovering with his ice baths and lying horizontal. Helen, how did you get into golf? And tell us, did any family members play?
So my dad has always been a golfer and my brother is one of those really fabulous but annoying people that's just really good at all sports. You know those blokes? And my brother's really humble. So, you know, my brother will not play golf all year, then go up and just like not even line up his shot, just walk up, whack it, off he goes. And my dad works really hard. My dad's always trying to get me and my mum into golf. And we've always been like, no. Slingsby came along, said, do you want to learn golf? 6 months, you can play in this competition. You'll get some nice golf clubs, you'll get some nice golf lessons. I thought, fine.
Happy days.
I signed up to make my dad happy. This would be nice to be able to do something with him. Because as an adult, woman, you don't have that many ways to spend time with your dad, do you? Like, you yeah. know, I go shopping with mum or hang out with the babies with my mum, but I don't necessarily have that much common ground to hang out with my dad. And he's, oh, my dad's just top draw, he's the best. So I did it for him, underestimated the competition element. When I got into it, I mean, I know you know Pink's, and she was in it as well, and we were like, oh my gosh, this is an actual competition to play at Wentworth. We underestimated that. Yes, I loved it, but I definitely underestimated the competition element.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a massive challenge, picking up a golf club for the first time. Your dad, what's his name?
Richard.
What does Richard play off? Is he single handicap?
He wants to be lower, but he's only allowed to play once a week.
Oh, so, fine, okay. He's probably like a really good 12 or something. Richard, you can be my partner anytime. But you mentioned the Slingsby Golf Academy. It was an initiative to inspire more women to get into golf and champion the social side of the sport. You trained with Natalie Pinkham, Fleur East, Bella Shah. This was back in 2021. And you won the playoff and got to play in the BMW PGA Championship. Which is the toughest part of golf?
Going off the first tee, definitely. Like I think for me, what I loved about it was championing that social side. I mean, the girl that I trained with, who coached me, Steph Davies in Harrogate, at Rudding Park, she organised these like socials where every now and again it was, I mean, get this, golf, gin and a bit of a lesson.
Amazing. Great combination. Yeah.
So many women signed up and it was brilliant because there was a lot of women who were like, oh, I always liked the idea of it, but I was intimidated. Or there was a lot of women who were saying, oh, I played years ago and then I had my kids and I just gave it up and I didn't really know how to find my way back to it. And I think that's what this competition was great for. And I was really kind of buzzing off that loads of people got involved. But, you know, the hardest bit was definitely we went to Wentworth for the playoff. And yeah, eventually I won.
Who were all the competitors again?
So there was Fleur East, Natalie Pinkham, Bella Shah and me. We based 6 months to learn. Then we went to Wentworth and played off the four of us. And whoever won then played in the Pro-Am.
That's it. Because I remember Judy Murray was a different year, wasn't she? And Zara Phillips a different year. Right, got you. Okay.
And so we went for this playoff, the four of us. Fleur stands up. And this is what we've been building up to, the big moment for 6 months.
This is my moment, okay? Don't overthink it though, Helen.
Oh, just enjoy it. No, you're at Wentworth. Lady captain's there. The cameras are there. It's the moment we've been waiting for. Everybody's like, oh, how's she going to play? How's she going to play? Flair stands up, drives it, I kid you not, 220 yards,
oh,
something like that.
Oh, straight down the middle.
Straight down the middle. Nat stands up, about 190, straight down the middle. Bella stands up, who, by her own admission, had not found it easy, right?
Okay.
Bella stands up with like a 7-iron, straight down the middle, 120. I stand up.
Helen Skelton on the tee.
Oh, giving it my, you know, all the confidence, stand up with my driver. I kid you not, I clipped it, it went over my head and backwards.
Behind you?
Behind me. And you know,
that's really skillful to do. Like, you'll never, ever be able to do that again.
Everybody at the tee was like,
they didn't know what to do, did they?
Mortifying. And so it was the worst seven holes of my life. The worst seven holes. I was terrible. And then on hole eight, Kenny Logan, who was there, he just looked at me and went, what are you doing? He's like, you're not bad at this. Just stop playing bad. It just clicked. Hey, what am I doing? I'm not bad. And then went on to have a very good seven. So ultimately, somehow, I won the playoff and earned my place.
That's brilliant. So basically, you owe everything to Kenny Logan. Kenny, if you're listening, please send us a little message to see what you think about that. You changed Helen's game. That's remarkable. Sometimes you just need a kick up the backside, Helen, don't you?
Well, that's literally what he did. He whizzed up on his little golf buggy. He's like, you're not bad at this. We actually said something that's not podcast friendly, but I won't say it. You can imagine.
Yes.
He's a Scottish guy. He's a Scottish form of colourful language. He's like, Skelton, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. So play seven. Earned my place in the Pro-Am, which was just, I mean, what an experience. And
wow. So with Dan Walker and Andy Sullivan, great guys.
I was terrified the night before. Andy and Dan were so, so great. And the whole point of this is to show women that it's not intimidating. So even if you totally fluff the first tee, it doesn't matter. And what was great about Dan and Andy in particular is Andy went, Helen, you're our strongest member of our team. I was like, yeah, whatever. I thought he was being nice. And he went, no, your handicap's so bad that you're an asset.
What was your handicap in the Pro-Am? What was it allowed to be?
Because I hadn't played enough, so I think it was 32.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah, you come in useful on loads of holes. Yeah, and you don't need to come in on every hole. It's just a few, you know, a few key shots.
Yeah, so he was like, Helen, you're our secret weapon. I was like, wow, okay. And then I saw what he meant. So we played the version, is it Texas Scramble, where they drive and you play from the furthest drive?
That's it, yeah.
So he was like, as long as you can putt, we're going to do well.
How's your putting?
Yeah, it was good.
Great.
Because I practiced a lot of putting at home with the kids because I could do that at home.
Because a lot of people who take up the game for the first time, they find the short game very difficult. I mean, I've spoken at length to Jenny Fulton, who took up the game a few years ago now, is a brilliant golfer and hits it a mile. But she will admit that her short game is the bit she has to practice. It's getting that feel, isn't it, around the greens?
Yeah.
But I suppose if you grew up with your dad playing and your brother playing and being ridiculously talented, you know, and also you've got great hand-eye coordination. What sports did you play as a child?
Netball, tennis, badminton. I think you're right. I think for me, I enjoy going to the driving range with my kids because I know this sounds really sad, but I love that my boys look at me and go, oh, wow, that's cool. And if you get a big driver and you hit it far, the kids think it's cool.
That's awesome, but yeah.
There's not many sports where you can do that as a mum. And I don't think, it was Judy Murray who said to me a long, long time ago, find a sport that you can do with your boys. Because as they get older, you know, I'm not saying I couldn't, but I'm probably less likely to join in a rugby match or a football match with them when they're in.
Well, I can see you in the front row. Maybe. I don't know about that. No, you're absolutely right. And I love the way that you're championing the game. And do you know what? 60% of new golf participants are women. So the game really is growing and appealing to so many. So learning to play golf, how does that compare in terms of all the other challenges you face in your life? You were a Blue Peter presenter from 2008 to 2013. We've got a lot of Blue Peter fans in the gallery who are smiling and they loved you on it. How do those challenges compare?
I think what I learned on Blue Peter is, if you're scared, do it anyway.
I need to write this down. I'm scared of life at the moment. Right. If you're scared, do it anyway. Thanks. This is therapy as well.
But the thing is, fear is just another emotion, isn't it? You know, like joy, excitement. We all see them as good things. Yet fear, you just lump that into the same thing. And it's not a bad thing. Like sometimes we step away from stuff that's scary, but we shouldn't, because you don't. You know, all of those cliche statements exist for a reason, like the good things happen outside your comfort zone. And those statements exist for a reason. And I think I've been very lucky to make a career out of doing those things. And I think it's a fine line between brave and stupid. You know, like when I was, the whole idea about kayaking the Amazon when I was a Blue Peter came up and someone said, she should do this little chunk. And I said, we're going all that way. Why do a bit of it? Let's just do it all. And I think sometimes it helps to not be that bright and not overthink stuff, because I didn't know how big the Amazon was, but I was like, why can't we do it all? Let's not overthink it. Let's just get on with it. And I think that for me is a good lesson for life. You know, that we
absolutely
could both say, oh my crikey, this week we've got to do homework, we've got to do washing, we've got to make homemade teas, we've got to get them to bed, we've got to get to work, we've got to pay our taxes.
That's filling me with anxiety saying all that. Yeah, it's too much. Yeah, bite-sized chunks.
Yeah, you just think about what are you going to do that day and the next day. I mean, ultimately, that means that you approach a lot of things in a chaotic way, but that's the way I handle it.
It feels like that's the way you roll. But also, you really enjoy the adrenal rush of it all and then possibly collapse for a couple of days afterwards.
And all the Blue Peter stuff, people you say, oh, how did you do that? And how did you do that? For me, I never ran 80 miles. I used to do ultramarathons for work. I never ran 80 miles. I only ever ran 5 miles a lot of times. And like the high wire, I did this high wire walk at Battersea and people were like, oh, that was scary. But in my head, I only ever did 3 steps and then another 3 and then another 3. And I think very much the same as the golf. Like I never thought about the end challenge at Wentworth. I only ever thought, right, I really want to get it as close to that green as possible. And then I'll think about the next bit after that. I was never thinking what do I need to do in 3 steps time, which I don't know is a good thing, but that's just the way I approach stuff.
No, I think you could help a lot of golfers who are on tour right now. In fact, I'm going to put your name out there. You could be the psychologist for them. It's a great way to approach life. Just take it bit by bit. I'm going to take that on board. What for you is, I want to talk about Strictly in just a moment, but what for you is the most rewarding thing about playing golf?
I find it really satisfying at the end. Do you know what? The thing that I like most about golf, and this is probably a boring answer because it'll be the same as everyone, is hitting a good drive, and if when you hit it good, it feels good.
It's hit the sweet spot, yes.
Yeah. And that's, I think, is what makes you come back. That you can hit 10 bad ones, but you hit one or two good ones and you're like, yes. Like,
it's that feeling. It's really hard to describe to someone who's not a golfer, but that's why we want to encourage people to play golf, because there are those moments of utter bliss on the golf course.
And I think you have to remember that there's, for me anyway, there's probably 10 or 15 bad ones and then a couple of good ones.
We can all relate, yeah. Especially if we haven't practiced over the winter months. Have you managed to play much golf recently?
No, I've been to the driving range a few times. Yeah. But as I said, I think also I love having something that my boys are 5 and 7 and they're very, I hate to say it because I'm a sort of brow burning kind of girl, but they're very boysy boys, you know, they're feral and full of and spirit, you know, they're like little puppy dogs.
Yeah.
But I love going to the driving range with them because it sounds really needy, but they look at me and think I'm cool.
No, get your needs at the driving range. Absolutely. That's lovely. The social side of things, friendship, have you benefited and met a lot of people through the game?
Yes, and I didn't, when I came to golf, I did it to be able to go to the golf course with my dad and my brother.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect to meet the friends that I have. And what I found interesting, and I know this is about golf, so forgive me if we're going off on a tangent, but one of the I play golf with is Claire. She's from Slingsby. And what I've really enjoyed is hanging out with a working woman who's got kids, and we share an appreciation of golf. We like the exercise. We like learning something and the challenge. And I really enjoy having a space where I can, like, we laugh because her kids are, like, finishing up school and doing exams and going to uni. And what I really like is she'll go, you say you've got a problem. Like, your kid won't go to bed or won't brush their teeth. Wait till your daughter's coming home, say she's got a boyfriend, or wait till your kid's at uni.
So basically it is a therapy session on the golf course.
Yeah,
totally. I mean, I arrive probably 3 minutes before my tea time. I'm so discombobulated, I don't know what's going on, arrive on the first tee, smack it, and then have a good old moan to my mates. And it's a release of so much emotion. And also, I always need chocolate on the golf course as well, just a bit of a sugar rush.
We used to have little cans of gin, like
promoting the brand there, Helen. Well done.
Things did it. That's why things did it.
Yes. Just so she could drink gin on the golf course. Do you know what? I'm going to throw something at you. Dr. Kerry Griffiths, senior researcher at the Sport Industry Research Group, has said, our research has shown that golf can be the bedrock of community and friendship, which really highlights, doesn't it, you know, exactly what we've been saying. And especially in the 19th afterwards, you know, just having a good old gas about your golf and about life.
Well, in so many areas of life, you're forced to be friends with. And again, this sounds terrible because my worst quality is that I'm friends with everybody.
Is that your worst quality? My God, you're a great person.
My friends are like, they're not, you know, steady, Helen. But I think at work, you're
forced to be...
You
bond with people. You do, yeah.
And at work, you're forced to be friends with people that you might not necessarily pick out in life, but you're brought together. At the school gates, you're friends with people, again, some of them you love, not all of them you'd like in your real life, but you have to because your kids are friends.
So who don't you like at the school gates? They won't be listening. I'm joking. I hear you.
On the golf course, I think you kind of gravitate, or you pick to go on a round with someone who share the same sort of motivations and passions as you. And it's an excuse to spend that much time with someone. I wouldn't normally... I'm too busy to say to my friend Claire, who I play golf with, let's sit down in a pub for 3 hours. We wouldn't do it because I'd feel like that was too self-indulgent. But actually, if I'm playing golf, I'm doing some exercise and getting some fresh air, that's my therapy, because you're out and about in a green space and I'm with my friend. I think the other thing as well that I underestimate about golf is... like, my dad's in his 60s and I can play golf with him. My son, my youngest, is 5 and I can play golf with him. So unlike any other sport, you can play with some people on the same level, even at the complete different age spectrum. You know, there's no other sport, I think, that you can do that.
Yeah, we spoke to Padraig Harrington in our first couple of episodes, and he basically said exactly the same thing. Golf is accessible to everybody, all different generations, and it brings people together, brings families together. Even though when he was playing in a father-son competition, he did say that we should swap sons just because sometimes it's not that easy to play with your children. But the majority of the time, no, it's cross-generational. It's brilliant. It's one of those sports that does that, which kind of leads me on to why golf? Why? And you've answered it pretty perfectly, but if there's anything else to sort of allude to about why this sport is so brilliant.
I think for me, I've always been an outdoorsy person. I've always been somebody, and it's probably taken until my fourth decade to realise green spaces just make me feel better. And, you know, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Age makes the pennies kind of drop. And I think for me, golf ticks a lot of boxes. You know, we're all time precious and we're all trying to be efficient and all the rest of it. But golf ticks a lot of boxes. I used it like, when I was practicing for this golf competition, I loved getting myself to like the 10th hole and thinking, oh, I mean, we got time for this now, but actually I've got no choice because I'm on the 10th. So I'm halfway. It's like swimming halfway across the channel.
Yeah, furthest away from the clubhouse possibly.
Yeah. So I may as well get on with it. And actually I feel much better when I do. Like other sports, you know, maybe you go for a swim or whatever. You get out because you're like, oh, I probably haven't really got time for this. But I think golf, you're committed to it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think it makes my head feel better. It's physically good for me. I didn't realise how the physical benefits that I would get from playing so much golf.
Yeah.
I mean, my waist was tiny.
Ooh, as I breathe in. Yeah, but you mentioned headspace, mental health. In Australia, Canada, Japan, the UK and the USA, those who play golf are 24% less likely to report a mental health condition than those who don't play golf. So just basically get outside amongst nature and smack a golf ball.
Well, green therapy is well renowned. I mean, Julie Bradbury, a good friend of mine, she's always quoting stats. And I'm like, I'm not into the stats. I'm here for the anecdotal evidence. Green spaces just make you feel better. Call it what you want. Green therapy, forest bathing, whatever. It's proven it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
The smack it, whacking small balls with big sticks is really therapeutic. Maybe you're not meant to admit whacking stuff makes you feel better, but it does. There's a reason little kids run around whacking things with sticks before society tells them do it. It just makes you feel better.
Gets the endorphins yeah. going. Now, Helen, you just honestly, when I watched reruns of you last night on YouTube. That sounds interesting, doesn't it? But the Charleston, I was gobsmacked because I remember watching it live, and then I watched it back last night. I mean, your rhythm, your timing, your expertise, your precision with that dance was remarkable. Now, did you have much training as a child dancing?
No, I mean, I did dancing as a kid when I was like 7, you know, like tap dancing like little girls do.
Oh, you got natural rhythm though. I mean, it was incredible. What was it like? What was the whole experience like doing Strictly?
I loved it. It's a bit like, you know, you go on a really terrifying roller coaster and you're terrified before you do it and you're a bit scared on it. And as soon as you get off, you go, I wish I could do that again and really enjoy it. That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
And all things that people, because I did the tour, and on the tour, even Gorka was like, oh my God, you're a different person. You were totally going for it. And I said, yeah, because the nerves have gone, like the competition element gone. And, you know, I wish I wasn't competitive, but I am. And I think it's one of those things. And again, maybe it's the stage of life that I'm at. You know, some of the girls went out there and they'd be like, oh, the hair and the makeup and the costume, they felt amazing. Me and Ellie Taylor used to look at each other and we were like, the makeup's sensational, the hair's amazing, the costumes are super sexy, but are we making fools of ourselves? What are we doing? Like, one week she looked at me and she went, I was in a like glittery bra with this big wig on.
You looked awesome.
Which she was dressed as Little Bo Peep, and she looked at me and she went, what are we doing? And I was like, I know.
And I'm about to go on national television.
And, you know, there's a little bit of you, the devil on your shoulder going, oh, you got to face the skill mums at the skill gate.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, and all this. I loved it. And I kept saying to myself, just commit to it all. But it's possibly one of the most terrifying things I've ever done because you're so vulnerable on that dance floor because it isn't your hair, it isn't your clothes, it isn't what you normally do. And, you know, Gorka was so brilliant because he was just like act it, just, you know, even like all the touchy-feely stuff. Like, that's really who I am, you know? So,
but you have to get into it. You have to play the part.
Yeah.
It's performance, isn't it? So what did you learn about yourself?
I think to just to be brave.
Yeah.
I think not overthink stuff. I think I definitely, because I'm quite a bit like, oh, nothing scares me. And I was like, no, actually, this really terrifies me. He used to say to me before we went, they're going down the stairs.
I'd be worried about falling.
Oh, they make me do bits where I'd have to like run down the stairs and go, don't look at the floor, Helen, look at the camera. And I was like, I don't want to fall over.
You did so well down those stairs. I mean, just to get down there was an accomplishment, basically. You did so well. So thinking about all the wonderful skills you learned doing Strictly, what have you learned about yourself playing golf?
Patience is probably something I need to employ more of, and confidence. I don't know, I think it's a default position, and same on Strictly, it's a default position. When someone says you look nice, you go, oh, this whole thing.
Oh yeah, it was only $3.99 from the local store down the road. That's, you know, everything's half price there. Yeah,
whereas like when you do the dancer thing, and even on the goals, like Gorka and probably like Dan Walker, Andy Sullivan, they're all great at saying to me, no, that was great, and just say it was great. Don't say it was a fluke.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel I give too much information having to justify my existence. But it's actually, no, you can just say thanks, or, yeah, you know, keep it short. I can't keep things short.
Well, and that's where the dancers are really good. There was one week, I can't think, the judges said something and the other dancers were like, no, you need to just say, Helen, yeah, my bit of that was really good. And I was like, oh, but I felt like I should say, and they're like, they said to me, you always go on the dance floor and look like you're saying, hang on, it's all right, guys, I'll be gone in a minute. But no. That's your time. Get on the dance floor and own it.
No, that's great. I think that's a message for life, isn't it? Just own the space you're in, because some of us feel like, why are we playing small? Don't play small, play big. Go out on a dance floor, go out on a golf course and be who you are and just go and smack a golf ball. Just really quickly, what's next for you in golf? Are you thinking about handicaps, bringing it down, or just playing a few rounds this year?
Yeah, I need to. It would be stupid to do all of that golf and all of those lessons and then not, like, carry on. So yeah, I need to put some cards in properly this year and get a proper handicap and bring it down, because they were talking of playing it big. It's like I did one hole at the pro-am where, is it maybe the 14th,
which is at Wentworth up the hill, it's a par three,
and there's a stand
on the, there's a stand at the back,
yeah, and it was best hole, and I did it in two or three, and I remember it was, and I was like, and Andy and Dan went mental, and I was like, oh my, that was such a fluke, and they were like, no, it wasn't, just own it, and they were so good and so brilliant, and it was, they were like, it doesn't matter, these people have seen this hole, they haven't seen any of the hole, they've seen this hole,
yes.
So it doesn't matter what happened after they.
Oh, so good.
They were so brilliant, and it was the one that all the guys were watching, like Pinks and everyone was watching.
This is my moment. This is how I've played the whole time, I promise.
Yeah, this is how I always play. But I thought, even those tiny fluky moments, they were like, they're the ones that you have to remember. Like, it doesn't matter about the stuff that goes wrong. It doesn't matter about the times you trip down the steps or the sambas that you get wrong. Just remember the 14th, remember the Charleston, and hang on to like those nice moments, because they're the ones to bank.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, bank those, definitely, because we like to go over the negative stuff too much, don't we? Stick with the positive stuff and reinforce it. Right, Helen, just right at the end, we've got a quick fire quiz for you. It's called Clubhouse Curveballs. I'm sure you've been asked a lot of questions before about your blossoming golf career, but I guarantee you haven't been asked these. First one is, would you rather drive with a putter or putt with a driver?
Putt with a driver.
Why is that?
Because sometimes I do use I call it my, you know, the hybrid?
Yeah.
I call that my baby driver, and sometimes I do putt with that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Just because you prefer it than your putter?
Yeah.
Well, it's got the right face on it, really, hasn't
it?
Yeah, totally. Well, you've answered that. I would say the same thing, because driving with a putter is incredibly difficult. Now, who is your dream four ball, both players and non-players, past and present?
I'd have to say my dad.
Yeah.
I'd have to say Andy Sullivan, because he was just so good at getting me around that Wentworth course.
Oh.
One other. I think I'd like someone random who doesn't play golf.
Okay.
Like, just to get their take on golf. Oh no, actually, I take that back. I think I'd take Judy Murray.
Oh, and she's great company, isn't she?
Good value.
Great value. She's got some cheeky stories as well. Love Judy. Really
exactly.
Good forward. So Richard, you go Richard, Andy, and Judy.
Yeah.
Right. Well, maybe we can set that up and film it. Do you play with pink, yellow, or white balls? I ask this because I only play with white balls. I really struggle if it's a colour.
Any. Because I lose so many balls that I We lose so many balls and I'm always in a rush. But I haven't got time to go looking for that. So a couple of the greenkeepers at Reading Park used to, whenever they'd find like a load of balls, they'd bring them to me because they're like, probably 70% of them are yours, Helen. Like,
thanks, cheers. Do you know, I hate looking for golf balls. I'm like, oh, can't be bothered. I'll just drop one. Yeah. Or just, oh, yeah. Can we just carry on? It's the most boring thing, isn't it? Now, what's your go-to snack in your golf bag?
I used to get a flapjack from the where I played. There was a little like shack shed type thing.
Yes.
Great, toasty, but a flapjack will stay in the bag for a while. So a flapjack or a Milky Way.
Oh, good choice, like that. Yeah, nice and fluffy. And finally, Helen, you've been fantastic. What is your drink on the 19th hole?
Rhubarb gin and ginger ale.
Lovely, very refreshing. Bit of a sugar rush.
Yeah.
Love it. To go with your Milky Way and your flapjack. Woo, she's off. She's off.
Sometimes back on the 10th and the 7th as well.
So. Oh, marvellous. Oh, you've been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on Why Golf. And we've loved having you. And please do continue playing. You encourage so many females to play. And that's what this is all about, encouraging people to get into the game, whatever age they are. And yeah, we've loved having you on. I hope your day runs smoothly. I know you've got 8,002 things to do.
I've got parents' evening today. My kids have already gone, Mum, I know what they're going to tell you. They're going to tell you. I was like, oh, this is the mitigation, is it?
Yeah, I might be in a bit of trouble. You've been marvellous. Mwah. Off you go.
Nice to see you.
Remember, if you like what you've heard, make sure you subscribe on your favourite podcast provider and the next episode will drop into your feed automatically. Make sure to leave a review as well if you can. We're also on Instagram. Just search for This Is Why Golf and that's the best place to submit your questions as well for Clubhouse Curveballs, which we'll put to our next guest. To find more of the most up-to-date insights and research, just head to thisiswhygolf.com, where there's lots more information on all the benefits that golf has to offer. But until next time, from Di Stewart, it's goodbye.